We usually begin by asking a few people who have been invited to share some of their own reflections to start with. And we do that in order, and then after that completely open it up to questions, comments, agreements, disagreements, whatever, and try to do that really in the spirit of learning from each other and really listening to each other and moving from there. Here's Bill. I will moderate that, and let me just say that we do like for people to raise your hand when we get to that point, because of those people, it's a little easier that way to make sure that we get everybody who wants to say something. Tonight we're talking specifically about Memorial Day. Today is, as we know, Memorial Day. And this is a good thing to sort of follow the Vespers that we've just had. And I think especially at Holden, sometimes we're a little schizophrenic about things like Memorial Day, and not quite sure how to observe it. I hesitate to use the word celebrate. Memorial Day, Maggie's already mentioned, I was going to do just a real brief thing on the history of Memorial Day. It did begin after the Civil War, and up until World War I was really a day to commemorate the Civil War dead, and after World War I, it was included World War I, and then has been designated as a day for remembering those who have died in all of the United States wars. There are various ways that people have celebrated Memorial Day, referring in some ways to a paper that was written by Tom Witt, Elmer Witt, our director's son, about 10 years ago, in which he looks and sort of reflects on Memorial Day and how it has been celebrated in the United States. For many, I think, across the United States, even now, it's really a day of, in some ways, it's not so much for the dead as somebody in here, he quotes, says, it's almost using the dead to speak about the American way of life. To call the rest of us to a sense of duty, or call us to a sense of national sacrifice, of something that sort of transcends ourselves individually. It's a matter of maybe being part of something larger, whether that's some kind of sense of particular values or being part of our nation. For others, it has been a day to question and to sometimes protest. To raise questions about war, our country's involvement in different wars. And more recently, as Tom would argue, that Memorial Day has really become, as much as anything else, simply a vacation. And that in some ways what has happened is that Memorial Day has really lost its power on either side of the spectrum, as a day of really grappling with some of the issues of life and death, of war and peace. And let me just read a couple paragraphs, I think, sort of set the stage for our reflections. He says that, however, now in the 70s, a large part, this was written in 1978, a large part of America cannot find transcendental meaning in national sacrifice. Memorial Day no longer unifies the country the way it used to. Perhaps today people are not looking for unity in the nation. After the turmoil of the 60s, the Vietnam War, and Watergate, people are turning away from the symbols of civil religion and are trying to find meaning and happiness within themselves. Donald Whitehead recognized this move towards a narcissistic society. He quotes, "The new fashion scorns the past. It denigrates the institutions our forebears built. It attacks home, school, church, marriage, family, love of country, yes, even love of self. For the most extreme and well-publicized of this ilk claim they have no self-respect. The new fashion says there are no absolutes, no truth, no falsity, no right, no wrong. All is relative and all is of a certain sameness. The new fashion says no goals are worth the effort, that accomplishment is luck, that achievement is arbitrary, that therefore we can all do our own thing without fear of punishment or accountability." He goes on and talks a little bit more and says that As long as America's civil religion is unable to bring the people together and emphasize their common values and ideals, holidays like Memorial Day, as well as the 4th of July, Veterans Day, and Thanksgiving will continue to deteriorate. Given this view of national dissentiment, that the survival of Memorial Day as a meaningful and unifying holiday is doubtful. So I think, you know, we often talk about Memorial Day. In fact, I noticed in Emil's prayer tonight, he talked about hoping that those that died did not die in vain. And I think that's always a question that we raise at Memorial Day, is trying to somehow or another grapple with that in a way that makes meaning out of their sacrifices. And people, as I've said, do that in different ways, some by approaching it from a real sort of nationalistic, patriotic way, others by trying to really grapple with the issues of our country's involvement. So, I think the question is, how do we observe Memorial Day? Should we? Maybe that's even a question for some. How do we find meaning in that kind of holiday, or in an appropriate way for Christians who struggle with issues of peace? So, with that said, we've got five people who've agreed to start us off. And I'm just going to introduce them now and then let them go. In this order, Ione Porter will begin. And I'll let each of them share different parts of their experiences that perhaps they want to, related to this. Ione is late husband was in the Navy.
Yes. Right?
Okay. We'll ask Emil to go next. Emil, who was in the Navy during World War II. Sherry Third, who is
Who's young.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean that. I said the younger generation. I didn't say you were young. Mature beyond your years. Randy will go next, whom, as you already know, was in the service 1969-72, and then finally Bill, who I think was service in World War II.
Yes, I was in the Navy.
Alright. So, I'll just let these people go, and they'll each have just a few minutes, and we'll open it up from there. And I'm going to sort of keep time on these folks.
As Barry said, I am a Navy widow, and my husband was a flight engineer in the Navy and a flight mechanic. And he spent the whole war in the Pacific area, started island hopping from truck to Midway. And he spent went through boot camp in 1939. About 1940, he decided that he wanted to be in the Navy. I think that primarily because the country, the economy of the country was not good at all then, and to get a permanent place and have a job and make money, the Navy was the way he chose. When he was in the Navy, he served on a carrier that was shot out from under him. After Pearl Harbor, when the Japanese came back very close to Pearl Harbor, it was very near Hawaii. He was then taken to Hawaii and transferred then out on the island hopping. And they mopped up after the Japanese were taken out of one of the islands. They went in and they did the repair work for the fighting that went on in the next island that the Americans were taken. And I remember him saying many times that they so very near lost the war, time after time after time, trying to get the Japanese off of the islands that they were taking. And then he, after the war, he came back to the States for a very short time. Then he was sent back out, and he went with military air transport, which was transporting supplies and everything to all over the Far East. He was one of the first airplanes that landed at a naval air station between Yokohama and Tokyo. And during the Korean War, he flew from the United States, which would be on the West Coast near San Francisco, into Korea, taking all kinds of supply. Unfortunately, there were atomic weapons that went in. I don't know if everyone knew, and we didn't know at that time, that they were holding them. They were taking them to Korea. They never used them, but they had to transport them and move them constantly because they couldn't leave them on one base. And he moved them around the United States and also flew them over to Korea, and they were cached someplace in Korea for a backup. Then after the Korean affair, why there was a big ruckus in Laos, and he was on a carrier up from the Philippines, and they were patrolling the Vietnam-Laos area. This was even before Vietnam was even thought about. Then after he had gone through that part of the war, he settled down, his naval career settled down. It became very much like the civilian life. He flew for MATS. It was like, it was for the embassy run. He would leave from San Francisco and to hop from all the different embassies as far as Saudi Arabia. He would be gone sometimes 2 or 3 weeks on these trips. The nice part of it was when he flew with MATS, if he was out for 3 weeks, when he came home, he had 3 weeks off because he was on duty 24 hours a day. That 3 weeks he was gone. We spent 2 years in Japan, and it was when Japan was very Eastern. There were kimonos. We made some wonderful friends in Japan. One of the things that I remember most vividly, and I think that maybe you have to feel this to have the patriotic feeling I have of the flag. When you're in a country that people don't even look like you, they speak no language, you cannot read their writing. When you go on base and you see the flag and it's put up, or if you're on base, when the flag comes down and you hear taps, you get an awful, wonderful feeling that there's a little teeny bit of America there with you. My family was raised during World War II. There was rationing. There was blackouts. I was a block mother. If we had an air raid siren, I went out and gathered up the little children, took them to my house. The mothers knew where their children would be. There was a great big sign on our window that we were block mothers. And the rude awakening of Pearl Harbor united the United States like it had never been united before, and maybe we'll never be united again. Everybody was working for one purpose, and the hours that some of the ships put in were horrendous, and there was money. There was lots of money because there was work for everybody. And I have always in the back of my mind said they play war so that they can make millionaires. And war touched all of the families that I was with and grew up with. And the mothers had gold stars that they could exhibit. I'm going to run through the rest of these very fast because my time is coming out. I went to Hawaii, and I did go to the Arizona Memorial and went up to the Punch Bowl and saw the murals of all of the South Pacific or the Pacific Arena. And if you do get a chance to go out to the Arizona Memorial, no matter what your feeling about war or peace or anything is, go, because then you get the full impact of what happened at Pearl Harbor, and you realize what a tragedy it was. And my observance of Memorial Day, I won't go to the cemetery. My faith in God and my Christian faith was that when my family, whoever has perished, they're in very tender care. And so I do all of my celebrating, and I did it today. I put flowers in on the altar, and that was in memory of my family and of my husband. And then I went for a walk down to the bridge with Jim, and I threw flowers into the railroad creek, because my husband's ashes are scattered over the Sierras. And the reasoning for that, we discussed it before he died. He died of cancer. Was that we had hiked and been all over and hiked to all of these high places. And I just thought by me putting flowers there in this beautiful place in Holden, that that would be the nicest thing that I could do today. Okay.
Thanks.
I was in college at just started college when World War II broke out, And when Pearl Harbor was bombed, then the draft board got very hot on my heels. They wanted to draft me and my brother into the services. And so both of us enlisted in the Navy. We're heavy on navies here tonight. But I enlisted in what was called the V7 program, so I was able to finish college before I went into active duty. So I didn't go into active duty until 1943. I went to midshipman school in Chicago, stayed in Abbott Hall, and had our 90-day training there or thereabouts. That's why we were called 90-day wonders. and then shipped off to Bizerte in North Africa, and then finally on to the invasion at Anzio. I was on a landing craft, they call it LCI, called Landing Craft Infantry. And Anzio was perhaps the most difficult part of the war for me and for those of us who were there, because we had a lot of air raids there, I think, in the time we were there. But from there we went on up to England and got involved in the Normandy invasion. And I think many of us thought we would never come back from that one. That was a terribly awesome feeling to think that we were going to invade the continent, and here there were 5,000 ships stretched across the English Channel, as far as the eye could see. But fortunately, at least for me, I survived the war, as did, of course, many others. The question, I guess, that I would really address myself to mostly tonight is the question of what was my involvement, as well as a number of others, was that really morally right or wrong? And I know that there were conscientious objectors. I knew that there were men in my college classmates who were pre-seminary, and they got a deferment because they were going into seminary, so they didn't have to go to war. And probably was sort of pre-seminary, but I really hadn't really made up my mind. In fact, I was glad to escape that decision by going into the Navy. Not that I wanted to go to war. I stayed out of that as long as I could. In fact, I didn't have that gung-ho feeling about wanting to go out there and, you know, cover myself with glory and fight the battles of our nation. Nothing like that. Not that I wasn't patriotic and all that, but I think, first of all, that I knew, and so did a number of others, know that World War II was coming long before it ever came. I think even just when Hitler came into power in Germany, there was a feeling even then. And I was about 3 years old, I suppose, or so. No, not three, 30, 13, rather. add 10 years to that. Then I felt that somehow or another we were going to be involved in the war. And then when Mussolini invaded Ethiopia and the League of Nations was powerless to stop any of this kind of stuff, then we knew, and then as Hitler began to then take over one country after another in Europe before finally there was a stop put to it. We knew that war was coming, and so just before I left for college in 1939 was when Hitler invaded Poland, and then France and England stepped in then at that time, and my dad came home. He had heard the news someplace in town from somebody who had a radio, and said, now the war is on. And I just knew from that moment on that I was going to be faced with this kind of a decision about going to war. Because although U.S. was not in the war, we knew somehow or another instinctively that we were going to be involved sooner or later. I didn't time myself here, but you better watch my time here.
I am. You don't have much left.
No. I think, however, the question that came up, of course, would be the rightness or the wrongness of wars. And I have felt all along that all war is wrong. It has never been right to have war. I mean, we can talk about just wars all we want to, but maybe what the Martin Luther and some others meant was justified wars rather than just wars. I mean, the sad part about this whole World War II business was that Hitler had gotten so far in his rampage that there was no other way to stop Hitler. If he had been let alone, for instance, and done what he wanted to do, he probably would have eradicated all the Jews on the face of the earth, and then the blacks probably would have been next, and a number of other people. And I think we sensed this whole business as we were involved in the war, that in that sense, and when it got that far, then we really had to be there. We had to be involved in some way or another. But war itself is an admission of human failure and sinfulness. In fact, I like to think of it as a punishment that comes because of the way things are built in, that when you get that far and you get into war, that becomes its own punishment for our sin. I think our greatest sin as a people is that we let things get so far that war comes. Maybe I'll end it right there.
Thanks. Sure.
I'm afraid that in the past I have celebrated Memorial Day the way that Tom described many people celebrating Memorial Day. I've always just thought of it as a long weekend, time to go to the lake, watch out for drunks on the road. I think I look at it a little bit differently from now on, though. I was listening to the Morning Edition this morning on NPR, and they said that probably the most popular thing to do today was to go to the Vietnam Memorial. And I've done that before, and it's really quite a feeling to do. You're just really overpowered, and I was just really amazed by the number of names up there on the wall and how really big it was and the whole feeling that was there. And after I did that, I went to the Arlington National Cemetery, and you could see white crosses for as far as you could see. And that really kind of troubled me deeply to know that all these people had died because of war. I think that we should mourn at Memorial Day rather than celebrate. I have problems with celebrating Memorial Day. And we should not only mourn those people that have died because of war, we should also mourn the people that are dying now because of the way we are preparing for war. The way that our budget is structured now, it takes a lot of food and shelter away from people that need it and puts it into weapons to kill more people. I guess I have some problems with that. So Memorial Day is a time to mourn. I also think it is a time to pray. And we should be praying about how we can reach more peaceful, or how we can try to solve our conflicts in nonviolent ways. I think we need to do more of that. I took a philosophy class this last semester on death and dying, and the professor basically said that pacifists were selfish because they wouldn't kill other people. And I don't agree with that. I'll do a lot of things, but I won't. I'll die for you, but I won't kill for you. So I don't share that view. I believe that, at least for me, prayer includes action. And some things we need to maybe pray about and think about is war tax resistance. and being serious about waging peace. I take a few more risks, and one way that we can do that is through war tax resistance. And also trying to be personally nonviolent in your everyday life. Violence has a way of going around in circles, and you have the power to stop it, if you will. There's also a bill for a peace tax fund that's still kind of floating around. I don't think it's being considered now. You may want to consider writing to your congressperson or senator in support of that bill. So I guess that is how I plan to spend Memorial Day in the future, really thinking about how we can avoid war and work towards more nonviolent ways of solving conflicts.
Well, I wasn't exactly, I didn't prepare too much ahead of time because I guess I wasn't listening, and I found out kind of last minute that we were going to do a little thing here at the beginning. So this should be fairly short. I just jotted down some ideas, and I'll share with you, I think, somewhat in fashion with what everybody else is doing. And partly this is an answer to a questioning I've gotten about what my role was during the Vietnam War. And hopefully I won't have to answer the question or try to too many more times because it's just kind of awkward. I joined the Army in May of 69 when I was cornered by the draft and the option of a job in British Columbia with a provincial park up there that was it was feeling like a cop-out to me at the time. Instead, I decided to learn something about what was going on in the world. Well, getting some adventurous kicks too, I suppose. I enlisted initially in Army Intelligence and eventually ended up in a Special Forces group working directly for the National Security Agency. Technically, I was stationed in Okinawa while involved with Southeast Asia and China. If that statement sounds vague and confusing, it's the best I can do and it's meant to be. I was involved primarily in electronics eavesdropping. And that's all the details I'm free to discuss. Beyond that, you know, as far as the moral or philosophical, I could say more. And I suppose in terms of the war, war in general, and war around in and around Vietnam, and how I and my friends, some of whom didn't come back alive, felt about all that. I can only say to those who ask or to those who demand there's only one answer, that it ain't quite black and white. I think we war because we screw up by our fears and our arrogance, but there's something else, and I guess that's if I sense a threat to my family, my kids, your kids. I have a tendency to want to respond, and if that calls for violence, then I will kill for you.
Thanks. Bill?
I was in the Navy during the Second World War. I was. A lot of people asked me, said, what war were you in? I don't know whether to accept that as a compliment or... I was in the Navy in the Pacific, and fortunately, I shipped on merchant ships as part of the gun crew, and so I got to see quite a bit of the world. Seen very little action, but I seen the horrors of war, and that really left a deep impression on my mind. I don't have any war experiences to talk about, but last September, I joined a group who went to Nicaragua, and it was all veterans. VPAT, as they were called, Veterans Peace Action Team, came from the Fast for Life in Washington, D.C. with Charles Leckie, who's a Congressional Medal of Honor winner, and he turned it in because of his opposition to what was going on in Central America. Him and Brian Wilson, Duncan Murphy, and another man whose name eludes me right at the present moment, started the Fast for Life on the steps of Washington, D.C. They fasted for 40 days, and from that, they started teams going to Nicaragua to help rebuild what our government has helped destroy. I went down with the third team, and in the third team there was a young man from Chicago, one from Seattle, one from Berkeley, and myself from Aptos, California. We went down to rebuild a medical clinic near the Honduran border that the Contras kept destroying. This little village of El Cedro had 265 people in the village and had 45 casualties. Four of those were in uniform. The rest were civilians and children. It really made a deep impression on me taking this trip. And since then, I've really become a peace activist in more ways than one. During the press conference on the eve of our departure for Nicaragua, I was asked why I was going to Nicaragua. And I simply stated that as a Christian, we are called to be peacemakers, and that I could not avoid standing on the side of the poor and the oppressed of Nicaragua and what was going on in Central America. And I went to Nicaragua for two reasons. First, to show solidarity with the Nicaraguan people, and to stand up and say to my government that I oppose what they are doing in Central America and the power plays that they are doing in trying to force their form of democracy on the truly elected government of Nicaragua. From the Concord Naval Base in California, there is armament shipped out daily. Brian Wilson stood on the tracks and a train ran over him, amputating both of his legs. That made another big impression on me. I think we are all called to be peacemakers if we're Christian. And I feel that veterans have a big voice, that they can say an awful lot to a lot of people, because they've seen war and they've seen the horrors of war. I'm not putting down the young activists, the college people, and the high school kids. But I think our voices are louder and stronger, and people pay more attention to us. They think the young generation are just out there because it's the thing to do, it's the in thing. I'm really proud of them. And I think as veterans, we can educate the young people as to what war means. I have talked to many schools and churches about my trip to Vietnam or to Nicaragua, and I've even told young men who are ready to get out of high school that they are alternatives to joining the army and being in the service, and that I would give them names of people who would counsel them for conscientious objectors. I feel that same thing is true with my grandchildren. I do not want them to be in war. There is no such thing as a just war. There's just causes, but there's no just war. And if I was sitting thinking today what I would be doing if I was home to celebrate Memorial Day, and I think I would be at Fort Ord demonstrating. and either that or in a peace march sometime, demonstrating against our involvement throughout the world in our making of armaments and shipping them here and there to kill innocent civilians and children. It really bothers me an awful lot. And I think, as Brian Wilson, I feel that the better part of the rest of my life will be dedicated to being a peacemaker.
Okay, we have just about half the time, well, about 25 minutes left. I'll just throw it open. I guess you've heard people speak very much from, very often from their own experience, and people who come different perspectives on war to some degree. And I guess I would like to encourage us to discuss this in relation to, is there a way in which all of us can find some kind of meaningful way to observe Memorial Day, even with those who are absolute pacifists, with those who do believe in some kind of just war? Is there some way to do that, and what does Memorial Day itself mean? But you're free to ask questions to people who have spoken, as well as make your own comments. John?
I want to make two quotes. One is from Einstein, who is much smarter than I am, who said that the splitting of the atom has changed everything except our thinking. You still think about war as something you can win. The other one is, and I forgot who wrote it, that we have met the enemy and it is us. And I think if we would celebrate, which to me means joy, I don't like the word celebrate. If we would celebrate Memorial Day, I think we should look towards ourselves and find out how much we are the enemy of ourselves and our world. The enemy, as I said in my prayer, is too large a concept to put into one image. In other words, what the Germans did in Auschwitz, what the Americans did in Dresden, what the British did in Hamburg, and all this, all comes down to the same thing. Whether you kill 6 million Jews in a concentration camp, or you kill 6 million Germans by bombing them from the air, is there any difference? I don't see it. But if you want to create chaos out of order, then you should make war. That's all what you do. But I would strongly see it as more or less contemplating on yourself, on ourselves. I mean, what has led us to do these horrible and idiotic things? And what made the other party do the same thing? Same act.
Other comments?
I was wondering if anybody could comment about what they think's going on today, or just the present, having been through the world wars, and Emo saying something about sort of a feeling like he knew the Second World War was coming. You have that sort of, sometimes I definitely seems like we're living in a prelude to another war. I just have a strong sense of that sort of thing that's going on now. Or are there any feelings about whether or not we will be in a war?
I'd like to respond to that. In what I've seen in the last few years with what has been going on in Nicaragua, I strongly feel that we would have been involved in a war in Nicaragua without the demonstrations, the people who opposed what was going on down there, without the Vietnam vets opposing this, without the public outcry. I think we would have invaded Nicaragua. The general public at large does really not know what goes on, and they have no feeling for it. Whatever the government does is perfectly all right. I don't feel that it's true with Christians, although I'm really appalled at the institutional church, because they really haven't taken up the fight that I feel that they should. And I'm really proud of Holden Village and what I hear up here. It's really made me feel very, very good about Holden, because they do know what's going on and they do oppose it. But the general public and the institutional churches at large do not give voice to this. But I do feel that, like I said before, I feel that the demonstrations and the public outcry has really prevented the invasion of Nicaragua, and thank God.
I think, I'd like to respond to Gary's just a little bit. Can I
just interject something? Yeah. Why don't we do that? I guess I'd like to ask, I'm going to, as moderator, try that we keep reflections on that question fairly brief. I would really like for us to talk about Memorial Day and how these kinds of questions still impact Memorial Day. Not that these are not important questions, but I think if we're going to keep our focus, we might try to do that. I think that's a good question. The question then is, how does that, again, impact Memorial Day? Go ahead, Emo, and then we can...
I'll try to be brief on it. I sometimes have had the feeling that, yes, we are headed for the World War III, or maybe you better call it nuclear holocaust, that it could happen, although I hope that it won't. I don't believe that either Russia or the United States wants to get into that kind of a tangle, really. I mean, sincerely believe that. But unless things are carefully handled, it still could happen. You know, it's we live in a precarious kind of a thing here. All that I
think. I'm sorry to interrupt. But you, anybody else want to say? Barb, you had your hand up? Just a second.
No, I was going to say, I mean, this is another way of observing Memorial Day. I think I was pretty old before I found out that Memorial Day really was supposed to be about wars and remembering the military dead. Because in my family, there's a real strong tradition of going with the grandparents to the cemeteries where our relatives were buried and putting flowers on the graves and stuff like that. And I found that really meaningful. I liked doing that. Look forward to doing that. And they weren't war dead, so I think for a lot of American families, Memorial Day has become that also, of sort of that tradition of learning about your relatives and planting flowers on graves and remembering them. But obviously that's not the official purpose of Memorial Day in any way. But I still would, if I were in Minnesota, that's what I'd do today, is drive one set of grandparents, they'd have to pick which one out to put flowers on their graves, maybe one day and one the other day or something.
Okay, anyone wants to respond to that? And then we'll get you in a second.
I think that comes from when I was growing up, and at that time, that's what Memorial Day did mean. We did take flowers, and we took them for our families. Anyone who had died was the object of the flowers, and it wasn't just for the servicemen, or it wasn't for the war. It was definitely a family, and most of the times it was a large picnic after we had gone to the cemetery early in the morning, so that the flowers could be put out and be fresh and be there all day. And then we had a picnic. And it was a picnic of remembrance. You remembered your grandparents. You remembered that. I chose later in my life not to go to the cemeteries because I wanted the living plants. We planted plants in our yard, and I always take flowers to church. And that's how I chose to do it. And that was just a different way that I do it.
And I'll just note, I own put flowers on the altar today in the Phillips Center. I guess you already mentioned that, but she asked if she could do that.
You had your hand up here.
Well, I have a feeling that this has gotten into a discussion of the justification of war rather than a memorial. And to me, and I grew up through the period of two world wars and almost continuous smaller so-called wars since then. But and there's a number of them here that I know have grown up in the same period. One of the things that I was impressed by on your first stand was that the memorial has become a holiday or a day of sales and business. And I'm afraid that's true. But as a child, back in the Midwest, Memorial Day was not that. The stores were closed. There were churches and having services. Sure, they had the politicians. Even they were talking about in memory of people who had died in wars. Now, whether those wars were justified or non-justified, the men died, and they deserved the memorialization of the people that they presumably died for. I had 4 years in direct military during World War II, and I don't know, I don't think I ever saw a man go through the war who was happy about it or who went into it to gain anything except that they felt it was their duty. And the thing that I personally experienced was a conscientious objector who I was counseling, and I was a psychologist, who had won the Congressional Medal of Honor. And he certainly was the least aggressive individual. But he certainly felt that he had a job that was certainly as desirable in anybody's sight as the situation demanded. The thing that we tend to forget is that most military men and most men who have served in the service are really pretty humble guys. They don't seek glory, they don't seek fame, they don't seek the things that are frequently attributed to them. And I think you need to realize that the leaders in post-war Germany and Japan were military men, but they created a country so much more stable and favorable for the people that they had conquered, if you want to call it that, that there's no comparison. I think, though, that we need to stress the fact that these are people who died because they felt they had been called or because they were required in defense of their country. And the thing that is a problem is that most of the young people now, when you ask them anything about World War II, they don't even know what it's all about. Most of them couldn't give you the dates within 10 years. A large percent of them know nothing except the guilt trick that we've laid on them because we felt the horrors of those wars. And they have developed from that a fact that we were not in favor of it, that it was a bad thing. And you spoke of the 6 million Jews butchered, as opposed to the same category as the 6 million that we bombed. I personally don't think that that's the same category, but even if it is, where do you stop? Where do you draw the line between honoring somebody who does something that they feel is right and simply saying that because you don't think the thing that was necessary or right, that you no longer provide them respect or honor for what they did? Now, 50 years ago, the Memorial Day was a respected and a basically quiet, reverence kind of situation. Now it's become what you said. It's become a day of sales and a day for a vacation or an extended 3-day trip. And I think we need to turn back to what the thing really was intended for, and maybe close down the businesses during the Memorial Day period.
Thank you.
I think that may be one reason why we don't celebrate Memorial Day, and it seems to be sort of, I don't know, driven out of our consciousness, is that we no longer really recognize the wars we get into. It's all sort of underground. And if we did recognize Memorial Day, maybe we would think about the wars that we're actually in now. So I think that maybe that's part of it, and you know, maybe we should take it more seriously and think more about war and really recognize the wars that we are in.
Somebody back there, Sharon.
Jackie, did you hear the first one? I think that Memorial Day itself, though, too, just like any other day, it's not like we should save up all of our action for just that day. I mean, I think it's a daily, something that we need to be doing in our lives on whatever small or large scale we can, but not just for that day. But for that day, though, I can see where there has been a couple other days that people, like maybe you had mentioned, Bill, that are definitely, you know, very concerned about peace also, have tried to turn the meaning of those days around. And one of them is Mother's Day. Last year in 87, I was at the Nevada Test Site for Mother's Day, and they met again this year on Mother's Day. And it's actually going to become a tradition that women, because of women being mothers of children and being peacemakers in a way that maybe hasn't been recognized for many years, women now have been going out to the Nevada Test Site on Mother's Day, especially women in the California and the Nevada area, to celebrate actually Mother's Day as a day of remembering, you know, being peacemakers and remembering that mothers are, you know, the bearers of children who end up going off to war. So anyway, it's among many circles now, people that know about that, Mother's Day is kind of taking a different meaning. And I think that it would take a while again, but if there was, if I find anybody on an individual basis or in small groups, for people to be able to somehow, you know, redefine the idea of Memorial Day, you know, it would take several years to really change a large percentage of people's consciousness. But I know that certainly had an impact on me that day, because I wrote my mother and I sent her a card and everything, but then when I thought about the actual day, I knew that my family would be back celebrating Mother's Day kind of in the usual way, and I had written them and told them that I'd be there at a test site, and I was even wondering what their reaction was to that. I tried to explain why I was going there, but it definitely had a different impact on me and many of the women that were there, old grandmothers and older women, middle-aged women, young women. So it was probably different meaning of Mother's Day.
Sherry kind of touched on the thoughts I guess I was having, and I was particularly moved last summer when Jack Nelson Hallmeyer was here and talked a lot about low-intensity war, and I think, like many of you said, sort of a period of transition of what we call war, and I think in a very subtle kind of way, we don't recognize war as it once was in our history, and the whole notion of the of the fact that war now looks like peace to us makes it really hard to think about Memorial Day, I think, as the holiday it maybe once was. I mean, I too grew up where Memorial Day meant the week before you helped the VFW sell the poppies on the street and then marched in the band on Saturday and or on Memorial Day and played taps. And you know, I think there was a specific event and a real specific loss that could be identified in our history. And now I think we're involved in sort of low intensity conflict all of the time. And it's almost like we're distracted from what you know, war once meant, and it has a whole new definition.
So, we have a few minutes left. I guess continuing what you're saying, I mean, I'd like to just throw out a question. Do you think that the way in which Memorial Day has been traditionally celebrated or observed has anything to do with the fact that now at this point in our history it's losing its impact, it's losing its power, it's losing its meaning? Okay.
I think a more meaningful day than Memorial Day is Veterans Day. As we discussed, Memorial Day is losing its original intent. As we know, once it started out to celebrate the end of World War I, we should be used, I think, to honor not only the veterans who gave their lives, but the veterans who served and didn't survive. And that I agree with the gentleman behind me that I think that Memorial Day or Veterans Day is a backward-looking day. We should honor and respect those men and women who served to shorten the war, to give us peace in some form or another. And this way, in no way, detracts from all our peacemaking efforts looking towards the future to try to prevent war in the future. We still, I think, should honor those who were involved in the past. Sometimes we have to go to war to preserve peace.
Well, we have to look at what has happened in the past so that we can judge what we should do in the future. And I think you're right that we should honor those dead. They should be honored. But at the same token, we should take a look at what that war meant and what some of the conflicts that it has meant since then. Like Korea, they didn't want to call that a war. It was military action. When people died, that's a war. If there's a skirmish on the streets in Los Angeles between two gangs, they call it a gang war. That's a war. There's two people killed, two kids killed. Did they call it a war? But they didn't call Korea a war. I think we're brainwashed into thinking what they want us to think about things. But I think we should take a deep, hard look at all of that.
Let's see if there's anybody else in the audience first.
Okay.
Well, I guess
with
the younger generation coming up and they don't have parents or grandparents anymore that have served in the war, you tend to forget. Also the fact that when I was a child, we always celebrated in the schools. You know, Lilacs Union at Memorial Day and a great big celebration, not a celebration, but remembrance in the school gym. And now God is taken out of the school. That's part of it. And the generations coming up are not getting that in the school. And some of those traditions come up that way. So if you don't have any members of your family that have served in the war, nobody to remind you of that, where else are you going to get it? If the school isn't going to give it to you, your church isn't giving it to you, who's there to remind you?
Let's just take a couple more comments and then we'll formally close, and if people want to stay and talk after that, we could try to honor you.
It's hard to say this without stepping on anyone's toes. I'm sure that all people who go to war and who fight for me and the protection of my way of life have very good intentions, and you know, they have our country's best interest at heart. I'm not sure that I feel right about honoring the way that they did the things that they did. I think that when we do that, when we honor what they did, and we romanticize what they did, we sort of say that's okay, and that's a good way of handling things.
Just glorifying war.
Yeah. And, you know, sure, I think it's important to mourn their death and to, you know, show appreciation for what they tried to do. But it's hard for me to really show a lot of respect for something happening that I really don't agree with.
Yeah, could I comment? Maybe you.
Well, the only statement that I have to make is that I would hate to think that my husband, who was forced into the war because of the situation in World War II, and chose to stay in the Navy and did a lot of good with being in the Navy, that he did all of that in vain.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I have mixed feelings about Sherry said, because I think that a lot of the business of glorifying war, I think it's been sometimes exaggerated by movies, by television, and maybe by some of the oratory that you hear on Memorial Day and 4th of July, possibly. Well, I haven't been aware of the fact that there has been any glory in this business of war. This has not been in my background, and yet the fact that I did, that was involved in World War II, I don't feel any guilt about that part any more than what I should feel for everybody, because everybody was involved in that war. It wasn't just me. It was the farmer who farmed and furnished food. It was the people who had jobs in defense plants and all that. If it was anything bad, then it was everybody. And it was, you know, like I think what I said before is that war is not right, regardless of what you say about war. It's not right. Sometimes it comes because there is no other alternative. But it's sad that it should come that far, that there should be have to be that alternative. But I think to think about the veterans, yes, I think many of them really gave so selflessly, and there are people serving in the armed forces today, I think, who sincerely believe that this is an honorable and good profession, and there is a place for the military. And I'm not talking about making bombs now or anything like that, but I think that that has been an honorable profession too, just like some other professions.
Okay, I'm going to have to formally close, pull this to an end. I guess just a few, maybe just to close with some things to think about as we go. I guess as we said at the very beginning, perhaps one of the real crucial questions that people continually ask Memorial Day is the question that Ione just raised again, is did these people die in vain? And I think in many ways Memorial Day is an attempt to make sure that that doesn't happen. And perhaps the question then is, has the way that we have been traditionally doing that adequately done that? Has it adequately made sense out of these people's lives? And I guess that was maybe the question I was asking a few minutes ago, is that perhaps for some, the traditional way of celebrating Memorial Day has reached a point where it doesn't make any sense anymore for some. And the question then is, how do we come to a point where Memorial Day can be a time where we really do make sense, some sense out of those lives, and not necessarily at the same time romanticize the war in the process. Let me just finish with a quote again from this paper. Probably a more accurate interpretation of the dissentiment, as the word he uses, for Memorial Day's solemn reflection could be defined simply as an attempt to escape the hard issues of war and death. Americans have not forgotten about Memorial Day's real significance. They want to ignore it. So, thank you all for coming and sharing your thoughts. And if anyone wants to stay around and talk more, certainly free to do so. We like to break in an hour so that those people who are tired of listening to each other can, without being rude, can slip out. So thanks, and thanks to all of you too for getting me.